Welcome to episode 157 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson and Michael Lucas-Smith. This week we have Bert Freudenberg and Andreas Raab from the Squeak Oversight Board here to talk about where Squeak's been going since they got the new development process in line and where they're headed in the future. If you have feedback on this or any other episode of Industry Misinterpretations, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can also head on over to iTunes and leave a comment for us. We would really appreciate it if you did that. You can head on over to Podcast Alley, cast a vote for the podcast. And of course, you can interact with us in the Industry Misinterpretations group at Facebook and the Small Talkers group at Ning. This is James Robertson, Syncom Small Talk Product Evangelist. I'm here with Michael Lucas-Smith, the lead on our Web Velocity project.
Good, very early morning to you all.
I'm also here with Andreas Raab.
Good morning.
And Bert Freudenberg.
Have a nice afternoon.
Who has just reminded me that it's the Squeak Oversight Board, not the Squeak Board, so I will have to correct that in a bunch of blog posts. But we're here to talk about what's been going on in the world of Squeak for the last little while and what's hopefully going to be going on in the world of Squeak for the next little while. So which one of you guys wants to get started with just some background on what's changed, I guess, since the last time we talked? We talked to some of the Squeak board oversight board members back in April.
When the election happened, yeah.
Yeah. So which one of you guys wants to chime in and just talk to us about what's happened in between April and now?
Andreas.
Okay. I suppose it's me then. So, as you know, we had the Squeak Oversight Board election in March, and the new board formed in April. And there was a bit of time of taking over the old business and figuring out what to do next. And the main goal has been and is still the getting the Squeak 4.0 license cleaned and released and joining the Software Conservancy. But on the other hand, one of my explicit goals in joining the Squeak board was actually to try to bring Squeak development back on track, by which I mean I really went into the election with the explicit statement of saying I want to raise the number of contributions to Squeak. And there was a nice little opening in, I think it was July, when a discussion came up where people were concerned about progress, where I felt, well, this is a good opportunity to make a proposal into that direction. And so what we did was we developed a new community development model with the explicit goal being to reduce the number of hurdles that stand in the way of people contributing and make the feedback and acceptance process much more clear. To that end, what we've done is we've created two new Monticello repository on source.squeak.org, one that's simply called the trunk, and the idea here is just like any other software project, there is a trunk that captures ongoing development, and that's what that repository represents, and then one that's called the inbox, which is open for contributions from anyone worldwide. The big difference to what we've had before is that contrary to the process that was in place for 3.8, 3.9, 3.10, there's not a small number of the release team who has control over the repository, but rather we have now a group of what we consider core developers that have direct commit access to the trunk, just like in every other open source software project. And that group, I think right now, is like 20 to 30 people. So what we're trying is really broadening the number of contributions and taking the bottlenecks out. In short, if you're a core developer, you can commit directly to the Squeak trunk. We trust you doing that in an orderly way, and if not, you will get feedback very quickly if things go wrong. But the main model and the main idea is that you can, if you're a core developer of Squeak, you should have direct access to the repository. We've been running this model for about 2.5 months, I think. And from what we've seen, I think it has proven extraordinarily successful. We have been able to integrate a large number of contribution, great stuff that came from Juan. We have completely new fonts. We integrated the facelift from Newspeak, which is a set of really nice little UI enhancement that just makes Squeak look a little less awkward. We integrated closures and a whole bunch of other things that I can't even recall. In terms of the number of people that have contributed, I think we had contributions from roughly 50 different people. The number of package downloads over that period is up to 60,000. So it looks like really that process is on a good way forward, and I'm very happy to see that coming along that nicely.
So that's basically the main change since we spoke in April, is that in April you had this kind of thing in mind as your goal, and now you've at least partly on the way to getting there, and you've seen some actual progress in terms of getting more contributions into the trunk and having the Squeak project move forward in a way that you're more happy with.
Absolutely, absolutely. From my perspective, the difficulty was always that there was some development around Squeak that, you know, it's not that there was no development, but there was very little going on that really tried to move the artifact forward. And those people who tried were mostly, you know, hitting hurdles in terms of that they were putting their contributions on Mantis, but somebody had to find them on Mantis, then somebody else had to review them. You didn't know how old they were, and all of these ugly intermediate things that then turn out that your contribution from putting it on there to it being integrated and actually being accessible to people was somewhere in the range of 3 months at the lowest. And as things are today, if there is a new contribution in the inbox, it can be integrated, dealt with in like, you know, 20 minutes effectively. And we've seen that quite a number of times, and we see, you know, old people coming back contributing, new people coming in contributing, people that I hadn't never heard before, and it's just great to see that much of excitement going on there.
Well, so I guess I have a simple question then in terms of the, you mentioned that there's the core group of developers who have commit rights to that trunk repository, and then there's the more or less contributions repository that anybody can write to. How does one get from being just Joe Schmo small talk developer on the street to being a core developer? What's the process for moving into that kind of, I don't know, I don't want to use the word elite, but into that trusted community?
Bert, you want to answer that?
Sure. So, the very first thing you need to do is actually contribute stuff. You would upload packages to the inbox. And by that and by communicating on the Squeak developers list, you gain trust. And then either you ask the board, the oversight board, or someone can ask you or can suggest that you become a core developer, and then the board will decide. So we meet every 2 weeks and we'll then decide who else becomes the core developer.
So it's kind of an informal trust network kind of thing. I guess in a way it's sort of like the way things build up on social networks, where over time you decide whether so-and-so is trustworthy enough or not based on their contributions in terms of code going to the inbox and the way they've interacted in the mailing lists. So if someone was kind of trollish, you'd even though they had a lot of contributions, you might hesitate to let them in, whereas if someone was being generally helpful and contributing a lot, you'd probably let them in.
Right. It's a case-by-case decision, and the community elected us, so they pretty much trust us. What Andreas didn't say is that he got the highest vote of all the current board members with his proposal to go forward with a better development process. And so we feel like we have been empowered by the community to make those decisions. And if they're not happy, I mean, the next election isn't even a year away. So I feel good about that.
And now a short break for David Buck's Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. I recently saw some code for a user interface that had a notebook widget. When the notebook page changed, the UI received a notification containing the tab number that was selected. In order to bring up the right page, however, the code extracted the string displayed on the tab and performed string comparisons to decide what page to bring up. This practice is going to lead to trouble. The strings displayed in the UI are subject to change, but you don't want those changes affecting your code. In addition, it makes it hard to add additional languages to your user interface because your code would have to check the word in all different languages. You should avoid having to extract strings from your labels on a user interface to determine what to do. There's almost always a better way. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented development and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast. Yeah, now this goes back to something I asked during the April chat we had, was one of the things I thought was interesting about Squeak was that while there was a lot of contributing going on, there wasn't any kind of overall product management type direction. And the Squeak oversight board at the time, I was told, well, we can't really manage directly, but we can hint and nudge and so on. But it seems to me that with this new process where you've got a vetted group of people in the trunk, while you're not managing the product in terms of the way maybe a corporate entity would, you have sort of a second level of control, if you will, because you can let people into that trunk based on how helpful and useful you think they've been, and then Squeak can move forward in more of a, I don't know, managed or directed fashion based just on who you've let into that group.
That's true. And the board before this year try to stay out as much as possible regarding the actual development process, but it turned out that wasn't actually what the community wanted. The community wanted to have someone who leads the development, and that's what Andreas proposed to do, and he did.
Yeah, I'll make a point, though, in saying that you can't compare the process that we have with a real product management process. I mean, that is just not the same level of comparison, and mainly because all of the contributors that we have are hobbyists. They have an hour, maybe two, an evening to work on stuff, so you can't make big plans, and you always have to keep in mind that because people are in for the fun of it, they will work on whatever they want. So there is no real control for us over that process, and even though I have certain ideas and, for example, try to encourage people to look at them, there's no guarantee that any of that is going to happen. So my basic feeling about this has been that you need to pick up things as they come along, and good examples for that are the fun stuff that Juan did, which just showed up, and I looked at it and it was great because of his quiz release, and I asked him if he could re-release that for Squeak, and so he did. Another great example is facelift Elliot said, well, you know, look at the stuff from Newspeak, wouldn't that be nice? And you know, we looked at it and said, yeah, that is nice, we should be integrating that. But there was no plan in place to say, oh, really, you know, we have to have new funds, and oh, really, we should be having, you know, a new look, even though, yeah, that is obviously all true, but it's much harder to plan that if the community is basically one of hobbyists with very strong time constraints on it.
Oh, sure. No, I didn't mean to imply that there's, you know, more of a formal product management process. What I meant was that with that trunk process in place, while it's not exactly a product management process, it's much more of a directionally based looking thing now than it was, say, before.
That's
now.
True.
I mean, it's just looking at, I was having a conversation with Randall Schwartz in the IRC channel a couple of weeks ago, and he was pointing out to me that there seemed to be a lot more progress just based on the sheer number of commits going into that trunk.
Yes, yeah. And I think there the answer is just simply that the feedback is clear. I mean, there's a huge difference in saying you put your stuff on Mantis and then maybe half a year from now there's going to be a release within it, versus you put your thing into the inbox today and maybe on the weekend when someone had time to look at it, you hit the update button and come straight back at you. I mean, this is one of the big things that we also brought back, which is the incremental update process that now works completely based on Monticello configurations. And just the ability for people to keep track of what is going on is, I think, a great help for contribution, because it means people will launch Squeak and hit the update button, and while it's up, well, they might as well fix something and put it back into the inbox.
Well, it seems to me that to some extent, what you changed from and what you went to is before, the process you were kind of looking to have in place, there was this kind of perfect version control and contribution system that was sort of slowly being built. And I don't want to really raise controversies by going into the names and personalities, but what you've gone to, it seems to me, is kind of like going to don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good enough. While you may not have the perfect contribution system now, you have one that's good enough that progress is being made, as opposed to some perfect system that would never get built.
That is true, although I will say that I don't think there's any conflict between the two. I really think that the built mechanism that Keith was or is developing are something that would actually help us if we had them available. And my main concern was that I wanted to make sure people know how they contribute directly to the artifact. From my perspective, there was never any tension between those.
Yeah, no, it just seemed to me, looking at the mailing list and looking at what was going on, that there was kind of a thing in the air that people were waiting for some perfect system to come stumbling down the pike. And one of the things you seemed to have pushed for was, well, maybe that will happen, and it'd be great if it does, but in the meantime, let's do this, because we know it will work, and it'll work with the stuff we happen to have lying around right now.
Yeah, that is, to me, that is the bane of tools on Squeak Dev. Any problem can be solved with the perfect tools, and that's why we never do anything. There seems to be a tendency for people to think a little bit along those lines. So I try to, when I see that, to say, well, let's try to use the tools that we actually have to our that we have available now, because it'll help us to make an incremental progress along those lines. Yes.
Yeah, well, that's hardly a fault of Squeak alone. I see plenty of that in the internal development here at Syncom of VisualWorks and Object Studio and Web Velocity.
There are
always, you know, engineers who end up running down train tracks where they think, just give me another couple days or weeks or months or put in your own time increment here, and I'll have the perfect solution to this problem. And in the meantime, you've got other people thinking, well, gee, if we just did this, we could get past this hurdle right now. And you know, it's one of the banes of small talk is that it always seems like it should be easy to get that perfect thing out of the door.
Huh, interesting. It's interesting to me because at Teleplays, you know, formerly called Quack, we are purely a product company, so those issues just don't come up.
Well, I wish I could say they didn't come up here at Syncom, but, you know, that it does happen.
Well, Syncom, I suppose the difference is that Syncom is a vendor and, you know, also a tools company by that very definition, and maybe that's what makes the difference.
Right. Quack is actually a product, whereas, I mean, there's something of an interesting divide here, because both in this sense, Squeak and VisualWorks and Object Studio and VA Smalltalk, for that matter, all the Smalltalks are very similar in that they're both a product, but they're also tools because they're waiting to be shaped in a malleable way, both by our developers and by developers outside of our area. So it's not just those 30 core developers that are playing with Squeak. You've also got whoever else just doesn't happen to be a core developer now. And it's not just the people working here at Syncom who are building tools. We've got customers who periodically will say, I've come up with this great extension of Store. Why don't you integrate it? And then, of course, you know, there's that whole tension between getting the not necessarily engineering quality stuff that does an interesting and useful thing integrated into the product. So, yeah, it's an interesting problem between products like what you're talking about with Quack.
Teleplace, by the way, we have rebranded ourselves, and the name Quack is no longer up to date.
Okay. What's the new name then?
Teleplace.
Ah, well, it's how is that spelled?
Just like tele and place.
Oh, teleplace. Just like tele. Okay.
Yes. Sorry.
Okay, so like telepresence.
Yep.
Okay. No. Okay. When you first said it, I didn't get it quite completely, and I was thinking that wasn't quite as useful a name because it was harder to remember. But no, teleplace makes a lot more sense. Now a short interlude for this week's Squeak News with Randall Schwartz.
This is Randall Schwartz here with your latest Squeak News. You can find all this news and more at news.squeak.org. The Squeak DBX team have been very busy recently working on their OpenDBX plugin, which allows Squeak users to perform relational database operations, including DDL and DML, as well as SQL, through an open source library. The new release, version 1.1, now supports MySQL, PostgreSQL, SQLite 3, Oracle, and MSSQL on Windows, Linux, and Mac, as well as incorporating a number of performance refactorings. They've also found time to build a new website for Squeak DBX, which contains lots of documentation and links to useful resources. To get a better idea of the features of Squeak DBX and of the work the team has been doing, have a look at their ESUG 2009 presentation. You can also follow their work at their mailing list. For Squeak Weekly News, this is Randall Schwartz. You can also check out my blog at methodsandmessages.vox.com.
And now, back to the regular podcast. So, with that out of the way, we now have kind of a clearer idea, I think, of where things have, what the major change has been since we talked in April. What are you guys looking at going forward? What's the progress on Squeak 4 as far as both license cleanup and getting that out the door?
Bert, do you want to take a lead on that?
The trunk development we are currently doing is not going to directly lead into the next release. We are doing the license cleanup based on the last 3.10 release. We are in contact with the Software Freedom Conservancy about the legal issues, and they will advise us what needs to be done to get Squeak completely license clean. And our plan is to join the SFC so that we become a legal entity, because up to now there still is no legal entity. What we called Squeak Foundation before was only just a name. It wasn't a real organization. So the condition to join the conservancy is that we actually have a free software product. And so that's the reason why we do the license cleanup. And once we have the 4.0 version license clean, which is feature equivalent to the 3.10 version, then we will replay all the development that went on in the trunk on top of 4.0, and will shortly after 4.0 release 4.1, which has all the new stuff.
Okay, so you kind of have a parallel effort going on right now. You're going to put out what amounts to almost a retro version compared to where you're working in the trunk right now, because that's the safest way to make sure that you have all the legal things, you know, the I's dotted, exactly, the T's crossed, as it were.
Why do you want to join them? I mean, you don't really need them to be a legal entity.
No, but we don't want to... No, the thing is, we are all just developers, and we don't really have someone in the Squeak community who would take the time and effort to actually create their own legal entity. We tried before, but it never went anywhere. So the SFC is an umbrella organization that hosts a lot of projects. One that I can remember just now is Zamba, the Windows Linux client. That's one of the projects as part of the SFC, and they provide legal advice and do all the tech stuff and whatever. And so because we don't want to deal with that ourselves, we are trying to join them.
Uh-huh. So other projects might find that useful too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. The Free Software Conservancy is a great umbrella if you're a, you know, not huge project that wants to invest in setting up your own organization. It's a wonderful thing, and it provides a lot of benefits, you know, like Bert was saying, in terms of legal advice, in terms of, you know, other support, even, I believe, in some cases, in terms of funding. But you know, it's just a nice umbrella organization where you say, yes, we're an organization, we are part of the software conservancy, and it also makes you know, the whole open source movement stronger, because you only get to be a part of that conservancy if you actually have an open source product.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So what happened with things like Faro? That, I mean, there seems like something bad happened there, and what efforts have you gone to try and make sure that sort of thing never happens again?
Difficult question. I mean, there was lots of things going on, and I'm not really sure I am in a position to answer that, because I have been out of Squeak for basically the last 2 years, and that seems to be the main time in which Faro has developed. I think there was just a few bad things going both ways, where there were personal egos involved, differences in direction about, you know, where Squeak should be headed, what it should do, and it was just a bit unfortunate that these could not be resolved. On the other hand, I don't think that Faro is a, you know, not in a direct way, or has to be a direct competition to Squeak. I think they can work in slightly different directions, and as such, they could help each other if there is enough desire to make it work that way. You know, Faro clearly seems to be steering towards the seaside, commercial development kind of direction, and it is not clear that Squeak wants to follow that way, because historically that was never the focus of Squeak. And so maybe Squeak goes back a little bit more into the media direction, into education and those things. And if you look at it that way, then what you get is a new player, you know, almost more like the appearance of Umbrai, which I don't know how well they're doing, but they were taking a unique point of view on the whole, you know, what does the whole marketplace look like? And so from that perspective, I can see Faro have its own, area or its own segment of the small talk market just fine next to Squeak and, you know, next to Visualworks and whatever.
One thing that I guess disturbed me, and maybe other people too, was how close we got to losing that talent from the Smalltalk community. And I guess that's the... I mean, forking off of Squeak and making your project with different focuses is all well and good, but the idea that somehow we might lose people from our community, I think that's the scariest bit.
I'm not sure how to answer that. I agree that losing developers is certainly not a good thing. I don't know where you have that information that people were considering leaving.
This was from the presentation about Faro at ESUG, where it got to the point before Faro was created that they considered leaving Squeak and Smalltalk and working in Python or Ruby, but in the end decided that they would just take Squeak and continue in the direction they wanted to go, and that's how Faro was made. So we came this close, my fingers are inching together here, this close to losing essentially a university of new students and talent from enjoying Smalltalk for years to come.
Well, there has been a lot of pressure on the release team before. That's what Andreas mentioned. These were basically two guys who took all the fire from everyone. They were integrating all the changes without much of a thank you, but everyone just pointing out, oh, you're missing this, you're missing that, and this doesn't go well. And so they put in a lot of effort without much, well, yeah, there was support, but it was just not bearable to work in that way. And we failed to do something about that in the last 2 years to put this burden onto broader shoulders. And with the new development process, we are trying that right now, but it was not foreseeable 2 years ago that this Squeak community could actually arrive at such a process. And so their own decision was, okay, we take this into our own hands and try it again.
So it seems like, to some extent, you could say that, you know, whatever you want to call it, the crisis that precipitated the group that's now doing Faro breaking off and doing their own thing, it actually ended up being something of a positive for Squeak. It's strange, though, that might seem to describe it that way, because you went from having what you just described more or less as a very chaotic process for integrating changes that fell on the backs of a couple of people who were getting increasingly frustrated themselves, into a much more manageable process that Andreas has helped put in place now. So even though maybe there was a little bit of, you know, I don't know, kind of a weird situation going on when Faro broke off and that kind of thing played out, it's ended up working out pretty well for Squeak, because you've now got a process that most people seem to be much happier with.
I would agree.
Yeah, I'd say that's what's happened. It's very good.
And now a short break for this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Pretoria, South Africa. Extreme Human Resources is looking for a software developer, programmer, systems analyst who has a bachelor's degree in mathematics or computer science, excellent business analysis skills, and experience with OOAD, banking or financial services, and Smalltalk. It is considered a plus if you have experience with gathering requirements, web development, and agile development. This permanent position pays 20,000 to 50,000 Rand per year. Cincinnati, Ohio. There is a position for a senior technical support engineer on my team at CINCOM. We are looking for someone who has a minimum of 4 years hands-on experience with VisualWorks or Object Studio, a minimum of 2 years appropriate technical support experience, cross-platform debugging experience and experience in HP UX, Mac, Windows, Solaris, and Linux environments. Fluency with network programming and testing, TCP/IP, OpenTalk, etc. Programming experience with ActiveX, OCX controls, and other APIs. A background building web applications is considered plus, as is database experience with Oracle, DB2, or MS SQL, and knowledge of C, C++, and assembler languages. Outstanding written and verbal English language communication skills are required, and from my experience on the team, I can tell you that you will be using those communication skills every day. However, unlike prior positions on our team, the company has a very strong preference that applicants live within a reasonable commuting distance of CINCOM's global headquarters office in Cincinnati, Ohio, or are willing to relocate to the area. The jobs listed in this report are just a few examples of these Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit our public directory page at xrl.us/smalltalkjobs or read my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
And now, back to the regular podcast.
You know, actually, one thing that's been interesting with Faro, at ESUG, they were having people sign up to commit to Faro. You don't have to actually do any commits, but what you're saying is that if you do commit, you're committing under the MIT. Is Squeak going to do the same sort of thing where anybody who wants to commit to Squeak has to first prove that they're committing under MIT?
No, because the statement is very clear on source.squeak.org that whatever goes there is under MIT, and the reality is that signing a paper makes that only a little bit more real than it is already. We could do that if people felt that this was of value. Personally, I think it's yet another hurdle that I'd like not to have there. If people feel that otherwise the contributions are questionable, we could certainly do that, but I don't see that problem, to be honest.
It's certainly a scary, brave new world where Squeak suddenly has block closures, I have to say.
Well, actually, I wanted to ask a question going back to, you mentioned Seaside, and I wanted to ask a question relative to that, because Seaside core development is now going on in Faro, and we heard a couple of times at ESUG that they were looking for people from the Squeak community to make sure that Seaside remains portable between Faro and Squeak, so they were actively looking for people to kind of keep track about it. Maybe port's the wrong word, but you know, just manage the process so that nothing odd crops up between the two dialects in terms of Seaside. So are there any developers now who've signed up for that?
Yeah, we are committed to supporting Seaside and Squeak. There is no doubt about it. Seaside 3.0, for example, loads wonderfully in the current trunk image. All the tests pass and everything's fine. I have myself, for example, subscribed to the Seaside developers list just to keep an eye on that and keep an eye on potential issues with compatibility. I think there are other people out there who are doing the same and who are looking at things. So I think you can safely expect that Seaside will continue to function and Squeak just fine, and we will do anything that's necessary to make that work.
Yeah, Michael could probably tell you more than you'd ever want to know about the challenges of keeping up with the Seaside 2.8 to 2.9 to 3.0 transition, because we've run into any number of small little headaches in terms of getting things over from Monticello and the changes that they've been making into VisualWorks. So I guess if you take a look at where you're going, you've got the development process in place. 4.0 will have the license cleanup, and I guess 4.1 or 4.01 or whatever you decide to call it will be what's currently in the trunk pushed back on top of the license clean version 4.0. Do you have any kind of direction post that? I mean, those are all fairly large-scale projects. What do you see happening with Squeak once you get to that point where you've integrated the trunk work into 4.0, you pushed out 4.1 or 4.01 or whatever you want to call it? Where do you see things headed then?
Basically, it depends on what the community wants, what they are contributing. I could only speak of myself, which is I'm developing the eToys educational system, which was part of Squeak but not maintained in Squeak anymore for a while. It's at Squeakland, now led by a new foundation, the Squeakland Foundation. We spent 2 years making a new release that works on the old PC machine and that is released just now on squeakland.org. And this forked off basically at the couple years ago. 3.6 was, I think, the last version, and in 3.8 a cross-merge happened. So that was when the last time the eToys line of images and the squeak.org line of images were merged. And one of my goals is to bring those two closer together again, because we are not the largest community, and splitting that off is not the best use of resources. And so I'm happy that Squeak itself can now move on to the more media-centric areas, and so that's now an option to bring eToys back closer together.
Well, I think it's probably good news that eToys is coming back, because I used years ago when my daughter was in elementary school. I once taught an extracurricular class of fifth and sixth graders to use Smalltalk using Squeak and eToys was something they glommed onto immediately.
Also, as much as I agree with Bert that we really have no precise control over what's going to happen in the future, I can certainly say which kind of things I would like to see happening and which kind of things I will be happy to actively encourage and support. First and foremost is we're going to get smaller. The ability to unload and reload MVC is almost there, and hopefully we'll get that before 4.1 gets final, so that you will have a loadable MVC package that you can load and unload at will. More work along those lines is always welcome, because we want to get in a better structured image representation. We want to have a more layered set of packages that sit clearly on top of each other, but we also want to do that in a careful way that makes sure things are reloadable and don't just get broken along the way. We will probably try to do a little bit more in the Unicode and internationalization area, because there's a lot of work which wasn't quite completed. There are still issues sometimes with the white character stuff, etc., etc. Nicolas Sellier, for example, has spent a lot of time in some of these areas and done some great work. I hope that we'll get better along those lines too. And lastly, I really hope that the work that has already started on integrating Polymorph will come to a good conclusion. I don't know if you know Polymorph. It's a skinning system for Squeak. And the issue with it is really that it does a monster amount of patches all over the different places that we have to deal with and integrate into, you know, the basic system. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. And I know Ronald is working on this right now, so I'm sure he could use some help. Those are directions that I hope we will address over the coming months, and, you know, hopefully many, many more.
Okay, well, that Polymorph stuff sounds interesting. I didn't actually know anything about that. I guess probably one of the questions that perennially comes up about Squeak that I'm always curious about is there anything going on that would maybe banish the one single window thing to history and go into, I don't know, maybe this is the wrong way of describing it, but the more modern look of multiple windows?
Well, the trick is there is support for that. It has been in Squeak since, I think, 3.8 or something like that. There is the host windows support, which allows you to open new host windows and which allows you to blit onto those windows. The problem with it is that Morphic is particularly badly suited to supporting that because there are too many assumptions about it having global state. But for example, there was a version of Host Windows for Tweak that worked just fine, and it's more a matter of people going into that and working out the kinks of the integration than it is a matter of, you know, adding multiple Windows support at all. The basic features are in place. There is work that is left to be done, and as far as it looks from, you know, the last 2 years, there's just not enough interest in doing anything down that path, or at least nobody has picked it up so far.
Well, it's sort of counter to a lot of the projects in Squeak, right? I mean, Squeak Toys is all about using Morphic, and putting it on the one laptop per child doesn't really make sense to have multiple windows there either.
Right. It really depends on the projects that you do, and for example, Sophie, the content authoring system that was done in Squeak with the Tweak UI, I think that used Host Windows. If a project that's done in Squeak decides, okay, we want to use that support for multiple windows, they can do so, but it doesn't come up that often. So it's not in Squeak by default yet.
So it's probably the sort of thing that people outside the Squeak community are more interested in than people inside the Squeak community.
I think that's right.
Okay. Well, Michael, do you have any final questions you want to throw? Because I think I'm pretty much questioned out myself.
No, I think we're at a good place with Squeak, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. I've seen the repository of Monticello packages, and it's definitely a new world for Squeak. It's never felt quite so accessible before. So. I'm interested to see what happens with the next, and I'm looking forward to Squeak 4.0 under the MIT license.
Yeah, I think we can definitely say that the board's been doing good things as far as getting that process in place, because it looks like there's a lot more activity around Squeak now than there was even just a year ago.
Definitely feels like that.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Andreas, and you, Bert, for coming on the podcast. It's been great to have you here.
Great to speak to you.
Great talking to you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
If you enjoyed this week's podcast, please tell other people about it. We'd love to have more Smalltalkers and more developers learning about Smalltalk through the industry misinterpretation of the podcast. If you have feedback, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to Facebook, join the Industry Misinterpretations group. Head on over to Ning and join the Smalltalkers group. Or head on over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for the podcast. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.